You're listening to another top-rated radio show on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Welcome to the American Hour with your host, Commander Tom Garcia, on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Good afternoon, everybody. I am Tom Garcia, and this is the American Hour. Thank you for joining us. We're here on the USA Talk Radio Network. You can always find us, as well as other good hosts, by going to usatalkradionetwork.com. You can follow us on Twitter at The American Hour, and our Facebook page. If you haven't been there, please go check it out. And click on the like button for us. We really appreciate that. It's located at the American Hour Radio Show page. So go look for a page for the American Hour, and then on Facebook, and check it out. You can find out information about past shows that we've done, because I put either press releases or a little bit of information that basically links you to our website. But you'll get a little information about what kind of shows we've done. If you go to my page on the USA Radio Network, you will see a listing of past shows for about the past month, who the guests were, and maybe a little subject line about what it was about. So we've had some great guests, great shows. And we've got a great guest today. We're going to bring him on in a few seconds here, Michael Cutler, and we'll let him tell you a little bit about his background more than I'm going to tell you. But he was an INS agent, Immigration Naturalization Service agent, for 30 years. And he makes the rounds on all of the talk shows and radio shows because he's very versed in what's going on with not only security in our country, keeping out the undesirables and the terrorists, but our problem with immigration and border security and how immigration, illegal immigration, is hurting this nation economically and socially and in other ways. So we'll have him on here, but I want to plug a friend's show. Steve Rosenblum and Daria DiGiovanni, they have a special guest this week, and they have all kinds of great guests, so you really want to go check them out. You can find them both on the USA Talk Radio Network. You can go to Blog Talk and look at CRF, Conservative Republican Forum. That's where they're at on Blog Talk. And this Wednesday at 2 p.m. on their radio show, they will be having the CFO of Florida, the Chief Financial Officer, Jeff Atwater. So you don't want to miss that, especially if you're a Floridian. But they always talk about important stuff that affect everybody in the country. So even if you're not a Floridian, that would be a good show to listen to. So Steve Rosenblum, Daria DiGiovanni on the Conservative Republican Forum this Wednesday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. 2 p.m. Eastern Time. All right. Let's see what else we need to talk about before we get into our guest. I think that's it. There's some stuff going on in the news today. Donald Trump isn't going to run. Boy, what a surprise that is. You know, $30 million down in front of him for doing another season of Apprentice. He couldn't pass that up. Thus, he had no intention. He's just a pot stirrer. That's what he really wanted to do. But real quickly here, the Treasury, since we were up against a debt limit and it hasn't been increased, is now reaching into federal retiree programs to help fund operations. And apparently we're spending about $58,000 a second to run our government, or run our mismanaged government, because nobody should ever have to tap into retiree programs to fund their operation. They should have been better planned than this. And why are we doing this? Because our Democrat-led government in the last congressional session did not even propose a budget. That we have a president who did not propose any budget whatsoever, and a Democrat Congress that didn't even propose a budget of any kind. They appropriated the money, so it was like, spend it the way you want, you know, and they appropriated to specific things, but there was no budget involved. Who does that? I mean, no person in their personal life does that kind of thing. So in any case, that's why we're in the mess we're in. And just to put, you know, a little icing on the cake, or a little salt in the wound, rather, the Treasury Department said Monday, China has cut its holdings by $9.2 billion of Treasury bonds. China's cutting loose our Treasury bonds because they probably figure they're going to be worthless here if we keep on the track with that we're going. So they're starting to hedge a little bit and prepare for it. I think the biggest thing that will help our economy and give confidence to the markets as well as the rest of the world is to get rid of this president. He's absolutely incompetent, and he's driving our nation into bankruptcy, and he is the absolute reason for that. So with that all said, that's kind of some of the top news. I hope everybody had a great weekend, and let's bring Michael Cutler on. Michael, how are you doing today?
I am terrific, Tom. How are you?
Good. Now, I forgot to introduce my co-host because I got on my quick little tirade there. Paula Lozano-Osman. Paula, how are you today?
I'm doing great, Tom. How are you?
Good. Thanks for joining us today, Paula, as usual. People missed you on Friday.
We did
have a good stand-in co-host, Dick Bierenbeck, and that's always fun, but still I got some emails saying, where's Paula? We missed Paula. We're glad to have you back with us, and we're glad. Now, tell everybody why it was you couldn't be on the show on Friday.
I met up with some friends that I haven't seen since school for 24 years. We got together to see a comedy show, and it was so good to see each other, and we'll be getting together again early in the summer.
And how is it that you reconnected with these friends?
Through Facebook, believe it or not. Social media can be an awesome thing if you know how to use it and use it correctly. And
yeah.
We started reaching out to each other, and it was as if you know, we picked up where we left off, and, you know, we laughed until we cried, and nobody's changed. We all look the same. We all look better. We've aged gracefully.
Good. Excellent. Well, that sounds like a fun time. We're glad you did that. So, in any case, Michael, how was your weekend?
My weekend was fine, but I have to tell you, the more I look at the news, the crazier I get. And today, of course, and, you know, my area of expertise and interest is immigration, but I'm not a Johnny One Note. I just a little bit of, about myself, I guess, for your audience. I'm a New Yorker. On 9/11, the ashes landed on my home. But I've never really been caught up in this fervor over athletes. My dad was a construction worker. He was my biggest hero. He was fearless. He was honest, decent. They didn't come any better, both of my parents. But other than my dad, my heroes were the astronauts and test pilots, which I'm sure you can relate to.
Yeah.
And I rushed home today after dropping one of my kids off at work today. Just in time, I got home 2 minutes before they launched Shuttle Endeavour. And they had Gene Cernan on and Tom Jones, who's now a retired shuttle astronaut. And they were lamenting the fact that under this administration, we are about to retire a shuttle that still had years to go. 30 years old sounds old, but realize that the B-52 bombers are twice as old, and they're still airworthy, and they're still helping to protect America. There's no reason to ground the shuttle fleet. There's no reason, and I think you will agree with me, to cede what was such a hard-fought supremacy in the space program to the Russians. And here we are, a nation that used to be summed up by two words, can do. Suddenly we've become the nation of can't do with a BS excuse or explanation. Am I getting any of this wrong, Tom?
No, you're absolutely right. Yeah, people have to understand that NASA is more than just space exploration. It's about a national, if you want to, culture and personality, and drives a lot of other industries, as well as it is a national security asset. We are less safe, and we're going to be less safe in the future without an active space program.
And it's also a recruitment device to get kids interested in science and math.
Yeah.
How many pilots, engineers, and scientists were inspired to go into those professions because of the space program? And you know, we have a government that wants to encourage more foreign students to come here. And, you know, this mess that we're in, and by the way, immigration, as you will find out as we discuss it, you already know this, Tom, I'm speaking to your audience, is really a major factor in every challenge that confronts America today, whether you talk about national security, whether you talk about criminal justice and community safety, the economy, the environment, healthcare, education. How can you possibly meet those challenges and protect our country when our border is little more than a speed bump and when there are unknown millions of illegal aliens living in our country, their true identities are unknown and unknowable, their backgrounds and intentions are unknown and unknowable, and their potential affiliation with criminal and terrorist organizations are unknown and unknowable. And we are now seeing, once again, the resurrection of the Dream Act. I call it the Nightmare Act, so that we will have aliens up to their 35th birthday. They've pushed it back up to 35 again.
Yeah.
Who can say that they've been to school and they want to join the military, which is nutty to me that you take illegal aliens again with all those issues, and say, sure, join the military. We'll teach you how to use weapons. We'll give you access to guns, even though the federal law says it's a felony for an illegal alien to be in possession of a firearm.
Right.
It's just so bass-ackwards, I don't even know what to say. It leaves me sputtering.
Yeah, I agree with you. Well, I'm going to do something that now I want you to give me an answer because I've done it on the show a couple times. It's really a setup, and I know you would actually answer this, but I'm actually trying to make a point. You'll catch on to what I'm doing at the end there. But I asked Paul this last week and then Dick, and I want to do it again because we may have some people listening today that weren't listening last time. But, you know, how do you go to a liberal and say, listen, can you justify for me, and they will, but can you justify for me how we're going to let somebody who came from a poor country and doesn't have anything and is living in a tent or under a bridge and is just trying to provide for their family. And many of them just can't even speak English or read English, and maybe their own language they can't speak that well and read it that well. You know, what's the justification for violating federal law to help these people out? And then they'll start to say to me, not Paul and Dick last week, but the liberals are like, well, come on, Tom, what are you, a heartless guy? I said, oh, no, I'm sorry. I'm not talking about illegal immigration. I'm talking about shoplifters. You can describe them the same way and make up the same excuses for them. We will drop the hammer on a shoplifter and prosecute them to the full extent of the law without thinking about it. But somebody that wants to steal the most valuable treasure we have in our country, absolutely most valuable treasure that we have, citizenship, or we just want to hand that out willy-nilly to people that have already violated federal law and our sovereignty. Now, see, that's the key. You make all the excuses in the world for illegal immigrants, but the reality is this. We have a problem, would you not agree, Michael? We have a problem in this country with illegal immigration. It's hurting, and you're going to talk about this, I know, today. It's hurting us in a lot of different ways, and you name some of those, and I know you're going to expound upon that. It's hurting us in a lot of different ways in this country. So we have a problem created by people that have come to our country, violated our law and our sovereignty, and what are we going to do? We're going to change our laws to accommodate them. What kind of insanity is that? So anyway, okay.
You're right, but here's the deal. It's both sides of the aisle. You know, I'm a registered Democrat. I can't tell you the last time I voted for a Democrat, at least on the national level. I think these people need a GPS because they're certainly lost in space. But the Republicans haven't done any better on immigration because let's look at the Republican track record.
Sure.
Ronald Reagan, first amnesty.
Yep.
Right, 1986.
Yep.
Ronald Reagan, who vilified the civil servants who were out there busting their tail for all of us, talked about how it's the civil servants of America that are overpaid and underworked. Well, I can tell you that the agents and myself, we were putting in very often 20 and 30 and 35-hour days without getting extra pay for it. Now, if you think there are people not earning their keep, not pulling their share, and get rid of them, absolutely. But let's be fair about what we're doing. So we could talk about Reagan. Also, total deregulation. I don't like unnecessary regulation. But when you have a total free-for-all where greed reigns supreme, then you wind up with outsourcing, moving factories to China, which, by the way, does not respect property rights, intellectual property rights or copyright laws or patent law, which I think is nuts. And then you had Jimmy Carter, who, of course, wanted these illegal aliens counted in the census, told us we couldn't call them illegal aliens unless we wanted to be subject to discipline. We had to call them undocumented workers. And I got so angry, I started to refer to illegal aliens as pre-citizens. Both sides of the aisle. George W. Bush, war on terror, but he locked up Ramos and Compion, the two Border Patrol agents that were simply trying to do their job in a very dangerous corridor along the border that's supposed to separate Mexico from the United States.
Yeah,
you had the President Clinton. And if you want to know why 9/11 happened, I will give you two answers. Bill Clinton, Al Gore. And for those of you that are in shock, let me tell you why. Because I will never make an accusation without sound reasons. And I doubt that Bill Clinton is listening. But Bill Clinton, if you're listening, I blame you for what happened. In 1993, our country on our soil was attacked not once but twice by terrorists from the Middle East who came to our country, committed visa fraud and immigration benefit fraud. They gamed the system. In January of 93, a guy by the name of Amil Khansi, a Pakistani national, lied on an application for political asylum, and we granted it to him. Now, I'm Jewish. I lost a good part of my family to the Holocaust. I was named after my grandmother who died in the Holocaust. I am sympathetic to people claiming political asylum, but there has to be integrity to the claim. This guy lied, And once we gave him political asylum, he repaid our generosity and our ineptitude, frankly, by standing outside CIA headquarters one January morning in 93 with an AK-47 and opened fire on the cars driving into the CIA compound. He killed two CIA officers and wounded three others. And then he did something that foreign criminals and foreign terrorists love to do. He escaped through the hatch by going back to his own country.
Yeah.
American criminals are stuck here. Where are they going to go? They'll go from New York to New Jersey, New York to California. Foreign nationals hop on an airplane, just like we saw. I mean, he's not convicted yet, but he's accused, the president of the IMF. He's accused of a vicious attack on a woman. He's on an airplane out of here. This guy killed two CIA officers, and guess what? He's on his way out of here. We captured him in Pakistan, brought him back, put him on trial, found him guilty, and executed him. But that didn't bring the dead folks back to life. It didn't take away the injuries that the other three people suffered.
Right.
A month later, we had the first attack on the World Trade Center. Now, what's interesting about it, one of the actors in this thing was a guy by the name of Mahmoud Abu Alima. Now, what's interesting about him, he got amnesty out of that 86 program that Reagan signed off on as an agricultural worker. Chuck Schumer, at the time my congressman, although I like to make the point he was never my representative, was the architect of that agricultural provision, and I had a meeting with him, and he basically escorted me out of the office because he didn't like what I had to say. Didn't even want to have a discussion about it.
Yeah,
and I
yeah.
warned him that fraud would run rampantly through the program. Well, Mahmoud Abu Alima, one of the guys involved in that attack on the Trade Center that left six innocent victims dead, injured hundreds or perhaps thousands of people, it created a $500 million in damage to the World Trade Center. It almost brought down one of the buildings sideways, which had it happened, instead of the 3,000, as horrific as that was, absolutely horrific, I don't mean to minimize it, but instead of 3,000, we might have had hundreds of thousands of dead bodies. Lower Manhattan might well have been flooded if the seawall had ruptured. And Mahmoud Abu Alima, who got agricultural amnesty because he was supposedly a farm worker, the only thing that he ever planted was a bomb in the basement to the World Trade Center. So what did we learn from this? Everybody that I worked with, and in those days I was a senior agent, I was assigned to the Drug Task Force, I had a desk at the FBI and DEA and ATF, and I was working closely with the Israeli National Police, British Customs, the RCMP, a bunch of people, Japanese police. We all thought that that was going to be that watershed moment when the government was going to finally say, you know something, failure to create an immigration system with integrity is what caused this to happen. We're going to finally do something. Instead,
yeah.
believe it or not, the Clinton administration cranked up a program called Citizenship USA going back to 96, just a couple of years after that attack, where they ran over 1 million applications through the naturalization process. And after the fact, the GAO came in and did a study because a lot of employees of the government complained and found that tens of thousands of these people who were naturalized were statutorily ineligible for citizenship. Some of them actually should have been deported because they had criminal histories. And then we get to George W. Bush, War on Terror. And in 06, the GAO said that Citizenship and Immigration Services, that's the agency within DHS, the Department of Homeland Security, that I now call the Department of Homeland Surrender, the GAO said that they claim to have lost, catch this number, Tom, 111,000 immigration files relating to aliens who had filed for a variety of immigration benefits, including 30,000 aliens who applied for U.S. citizenship. And every one of those 111,000 applications were adjudicated without their files.
Wow. Wow. Amazing.
Now, I mean,
yeah, it makes you wonder, doesn't it?
Possibly say it's both sides of the aisle. They can't give away citizenship fast enough.
Yeah.
They can't undermine national security fast enough. You're an airline pilot. You'll appreciate this. Richard Reed, the shoe bomber, just weeks after 9/11, attempted to detonate explosives concealed in his shoes. Okay? Thank God it didn't work out. Couldn't seem to light the shoes up. They tackled him. The plane came down in one piece, thank God. They landed safely, and they dragged this guy off the airplane. He's in jail for the rest of his life. And the government said, wow, you could conceal explosives in your shoes. We're going to make everybody take their shoes off before they can get on an airplane because we've learned the lesson. Well, not so much. Yes, we do take our shoes off, but Richard Reed, as a citizen of Great Britain, was not required to have a visa in order to come to America, which meant that nobody screened to see if he had a visa before he had access to that airliner that he wanted to bring down.
Right.
So you would think that we figured this one out. If this guy needed to get a visa, he probably could not have gotten one. If you saw pictures of Richard Reed, he looks like he just escaped from the padded cell. Well, guess what? Not only is that visa waiver program still continuing, they've continued to expand the number of countries that participate. We are now up to 36 countries whose citizens do not need to do anything prior to coming to America other than to go online and fill out an application online that asks a couple of cursory questions.
Yeah. Well, I think you've answered a question that I was going to ask you about in the Michelle Malkin article that came out last week, and it's entitled What Happened to AA Flight 1561? That was my airline, American Airlines.
Yes.
And we had a guy jump up and yell, Allah Akbar, or whatever they yell, 30 times, run up to the cockpit, start pounding on the cockpit door. The media sloughed it off as, oh, he got confused, he was looking for the lavatory. I don't think so. And she writes a very good article. But here's one of the things that you just kind of answered it. But I'm going to read this, and you tell me if there's anything else we're missing here to
sure.
answer her question. So how, despite a massive transportation and homeland security apparatus, did Al Morisi get into this country and get on a plane? He had no keys, no luggage, $47 in cash, and a trove of expired and current state IDs from New York and California, where relatives said he had not notified them that he was coming. He's a young male, brought no family with him, had no job or other discernible income, and hails from the terror-coddling nation of Yemen. Yes, the same place that Osama bin Laden's ancestral home is located. Harbors al-Qaeda operatives who are burning the torch of jihad and is deemed a special interest country whose citizens warrant increased scrutiny by DHS when they cross the border illegally. So, you know, she's asking, how does this guy get in here? How does this guy get on an airplane? I think you've kind of answered that. Our system is not a very good system. It's not secure. We're making pilots take their laptops out of their bags because their pilot might have an explosive in that laptop, and we've got to yeah. make sure we thoroughly screen that. And this guy gets on an airplane. I got to take my laptop out of my bag, my kit bag, every time I go through security, but this guy can get on an airplane.
Hey, listen, I had a gal from TSA go crazy. Because I like to use Dunhill aftershave, and I had a 3.5-ounce bottle that I always travel with. It's translucent, so you can see how much fluid is in there. Now, it's 3.5 ounces. I thought we were allowed 3.5 ounces. She claimed it was 3 ounces. She was going to confiscate it, got in my face about it, and I said, but the bottle is 2/3 empty.
Yeah.
So it wasn't how much fluid was in there, but that it was stamped 3.5 ounces, and she started throwing my stuff around and screaming at me. And I said to myself, wow, we're really safe now. Look, this is a charade.
Yeah.
You know, there's a wonderful movie that everyone out there should really see. It was a fun movie, but, boy, he made a lot of great points. I'm talking about Robin Williams in Man of the Year. He runs for president and wins because of a computer quirk. I won't go too much into it because I want you to watch it. It's on the cable channels. It's very entertaining. But they make a bunch of great points. And he says, you know, they're willing to strip search some 90-year-old woman sitting in a wheelchair. But meanwhile, we have people running the border, not just coming across the border, but they're bringing along, you know, dining room sets, and they're juggling their chairs and tables and everything else. And no one stops them. We have no idea who in blazes they are.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
I mean, all this is the illusion of national security.
Right.
And all that's really been happening, folks, as far as I'm concerned, is we have become accustomed to forfeiting any expectation of privacy or freedom that we thought we had in the name of national security. Now, I have no problem submitting to having my shoes come off and all this other business. I was on a program not long ago, and I jokingly said that pretty soon Obama was going to merge TSA with Obamacare. You go to the airport, you'll get a mammogram, a chest x-ray, and a colonoscopy all at the same time before you get on an airplane.
Well, that's pretty good. Well, now, you know, Michelle Malcolm, let me pull that article back up again.
Sure.
Last month, she found out through some federal watchdog that the TSA's counterterrorism specialist failed to detect 16 separate jihad operatives who moved through target airports on at least 23 occasions. I mean,
doesn't make you feel secure, and
these
you fly
guys,
routinely as an airline. How does that make you feel, Tom?
It doesn't make me feel too good. So that's why I do some of my own profiling when passengers are boarding and I'm looking around the terminal. You know, what's happened here, and I don't want to blanket everybody in this way, but I see it too often. I go through airports almost every single week in the U.S. and primarily the one that I fly out of, Miami. And, I mean, here's a perfect example. You talked about the aftershave. I walked through, and I did this for a purpose because I wanted to just highlight how ridiculous stuff is. Here I'm a pilot going to work. And, oh, well, let me back up just a second. When I come back from Brazil like I did the other day, or any other country outside of the U.S., they make damn well sure they know exactly who I am coming in through immigration. I've got to have documentation, paperwork that lists all of the crew members on that particular flight, and my name better be on there. My ID better have that right on my chest, my passport, and filled out paperwork that I've filled out about, you know, where I've been and what I've been buying and what I've been doing. They make damn well sure they know who I am when I come back from another country when I'm really just going home. I'm going home to my house.
Right.
But when I come
right.
to work to fly 220 people 3,600 miles away, they don't give a rat's you know what about who I am. All they care about is get your laptop out. We're going to search through your bags, take your shoes off, that kind of stuff. They don't really care who I am, but they're going to let me go fly that airplane. How backwards is that?
Well, I'll give you more backwards. You know, one of the things that I do, and by the way, while I'm doing this, let me put a couple of websites out there because I'd love for you folks to visit them. You know, I'm very proud to be a senior fellow for an organization called CAPS, Californians for Population Stabilization. Their website is capsweb.org, C-A-P-S, capsweb.org. And, of course, my website, michaelcutler.net, C-U-T-L-E-R, michaelcutler.net. And, you know, I just look at the lunacy that goes on because I do a lot of speaking engagements around the country. Last year, I was invited to go to Chapman Law School. Michael Chertoff was there with Asa Hutchinson. Michael Chertoff, of course, being previously the Secretary of Homeland Surrender, as I refuse to call it by the name they give it because it really is the Department of Homeland Surrender. And we were sitting in the back of a limo, had a big argument. We were there for about 40 minutes. And it was probably the longest 40 minutes of Mike Chertoff's life. But, you know, I don't mince words because this isn't trivial. I'm a New Yorker, folks. On September 11th, 2001, the ashes from the conflagration at Ground Zero landed on my home. My neighbors were killed. I can't even tell you what it was like. That night, I walked out of my house, and it looked like the land of the living dead. My neighbors were wandering around in the street. I want you to picture this. We could smell the smells of the burning jet fuel and everything else that was incinerated at Ground Zero. And it kept burning, you know, for weeks and weeks, I think actually months afterwards, because everything had just collapsed and the fuel had seeped into the ground. And it was just burning. And my neighbors were out wandering around. They didn't know where their wives were. They didn't know where their husbands, their children, their parents, their siblings, their fiancés, their best friends, their colleagues, their neighbors, didn't know where they were. Within a day or two, yellow ribbons started to spring up on almost every tree in my neighborhood, and I live in Brooklyn. And shortly thereafter, cars started to drive by with photos of the missing in the windows, asking if we had seen their family member. And the cars all were sprouting American flags with that picture. Have you seen my dad? Have you seen my mom? Have you seen my wife? Now, I had lost my parents to cancer when I was in college within a year. My first wife died of cancer last week was 25 years ago, and I get choked up thinking about those losses. And on nights when I can't sleep, and they're more frequent than I wish they were, I try to take comfort by saying to myself, it couldn't be helped. They were sick. As soon as we knew they were sick, we got them the best care possible. It just didn't work. In fact, I myself had prostate cancer 10 years ago, so if you guys are out there, once you get past 40, I would recommend get your TSA, your PSA checked and make sure that everything is okay because that's the only reason I'm alive now. But on those nights when I take a little bit of comfort, it's hard, I wonder what it's like for the 9/11 family members, and I've worked with them, I know so many of them, whose relatives, family members were healthy. They were in the prime of their lives. There was nothing wrong with them. They weren't ill. They were slaughtered because our government betrayed the trust that we bestowed in our government. These were healthy people. And I could imagine conversations that people might have. We've all had this conversation. Think about it. Where the significant person in your life says to you, Tom, you know what? I'm just so exhausted. I'm going to stay home. And the husband or the wife says to the spouse, oh, what are you kidding me? No. Go to work today. Listen, next week I'm taking a day off anyway. We'll go see that movie you want to see.
Yeah.
How do you ever not go to bed at night feeling that you somehow did something wrong? How do you ever get comfort or solace or find peace? And this happened to over 3,000 people. And the reason I say over 3,000, because more people have since died. 16,000 people have filed health claims because of their exposure to the toxins that were released when the towers collapsed. So my question here is this. What is it that our government does for us that they should be doing? Not getting into the middle of our lives, not doing other things that we could have a dispute about, but the fundamental, the most basic and fundamental responsibility of a government, to look out for the safety and security of its citizens. Does it get more fundamental? Look, I mean, you were a pilot. You're a naval aviator. Your mission was to protect America. In a different way, my mission as a federal agent was to protect America. But is our government really protecting America, Tom?
Not fully the way it should. Yeah, we're going out and fighting in civil wars in the Middle East to protect those people while we ignore our own borders. Absolutely, yeah. They're failing. The Constitution requires the federal government to protect each and every state from invasion. That's not happening along the southern border. And you're right. You're absolutely right. Well, now you came out with an article last week, and we talked about this, but I want you to, you know, talk to the folks about the gist of this article and whatever the highlights you want to, or anything you want to zone in on the article. But you wrote an article entitled, If at First You Don't Succeed, Lie Again. And what was that article about?
It was about Obama. And it was about how Obama can say that the borders are now done. They're secure. The fence is completed. You know, I have to tell you, it left my head spinning. You know, I've been on a lot of TV shows. I remember one time being on Lou Dobbs Tonight, and Lou asked me what I thought about the virtual fence, and I predicted, unfortunately, accurately, that the virtual fence would stop virtually nobody. But you see, I think that's really what's intended by our government. To make certain that no matter what happens, the flow of aliens into our country continues unabated. And not just the illegal aliens, but H-1B visas also. The goal is to bring as many foreign workers into the United States to drive down wages and increase profits for the people at the very top of the food chain. And if you doubt it, folks, go to my website, michaelcutler.net. I wrote an article a while back. It's still on my website. If you can't find it, you can contact me through the website. I'll forward it to you. Alan Greenspan was called by Chuck Schumer to testify about comprehensive immigration reform April 30th, 2009. By the way, I've given comprehensive immigration reform a more accurate and honest name. I don't call it comprehensive. I call it the Terrorist Assistance and Facilitation Act. Senator Jeff Sessions liked that title so much, he quoted me by name on three separate occasions from the floor of the Senate during the floor debate 3.5 years ago. So you have Alan Greenspan, and what does Greenspan say? Greenspan says, I couldn't believe it, I was watching the hearing live. I wanted to put my fist through my Apple laptop. I love my MacBook, but on this day it almost became a casualty. Because there's Greenspan saying that we have got to eliminate the inequality in wages between Americans with skills and no skills. Like, this is a problem, you see. The American dream has always been increase your education, increase your skill sets, and you'll do better. Education is the key. Greenspan says, no, not so fast. We need to eliminate the inequalities that skills create. Now, he wasn't talking about elevating anybody's wages because he also said that we need to stop making, and these are his words, folks, not my words, Alan Greenspan, we need to stop making a privileged elite out of Americans who have skills. So if anybody out there is listening to me, if you're like my dad, a plumber, or if you're a bricklayer, an auto mechanic, an x-ray technician, a roofer, a carpenter, I want to congratulate you because you are now part of Alan Greenspan's privileged elite. And I'm sure that you enjoyed tooling around town in your Ferrari, flying your personal Learjet wherever you want to go. I mean, this was so insulting and so infuriating. And he said that we could accomplish this goal of no longer making privileged elite out of Americans who have skills by making them compete with foreign workers for their jobs, which, by the way, is against the law.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, stop and think about it, how unbelievable, how outrageous this is. And we're being told the same nonsense. You know, you were talking, Tom, about homeless people. This goes back to this whole deal about this administration with the lies. We're being told that the fence is done, the borders are secure. The GAO, by the way, said it'll take 10 to 15 years to really do the fence. We went to the moon in 9 years, won the Second World War in 44 months, but America, the land that used to be the can-do country, which is now the can't-do country with a BS explanation, will now need 10 to 15 years to put up a fence. It blows my mind. But
yeah,
they're saying that, you know, we have to bring in these people, foreign students, because otherwise America doesn't have the wherewithal to be economically viable.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what does that say about the average American worker if you buy this nonsense? There was a wonderful book. Did I ever tell you about this book by Homer Hickam, The Rocket Boys, that became the movie October Sky?
You did tell me about that once, yes.
Well, for you folks out there, if you have kids at home especially, get the movie October Sky. It's phenomenal. I had the privilege of speaking with Homer Hickam about a year ago. Homer Hickam grew up in a place called Coalwood in West Virginia. His dad was a coal miner in the 50s. When they launched Sputnik, which goes back to what we were just saying about the space shuttle, it fired up his imagination. He started building model rockets. And back then in the 50s, the only way out of Coalwood, if you didn't want to be a coal miner and get black lung disease, was to get a football scholarship. Otherwise, your future was cast in stone or perhaps in coal. You were going to be in the coal mines. And he was one of the very first to use his intellect to escape the coal mines. He became a NASA engineer, as you find out at the end of the movie. He delivered the eulogy at the Sago mine disaster nearly 5 years ago. And I watched that service on television because I was so taken by that movie that was based on his life story. And he came out with a line that left me choked up because it made me think of my dad when he said that there's no water holier than the sweat off a man's brow. Now, I want you to contrast that reverence for blue-collar, hard-working America with the politicians who wouldn't know an honest day's work if it jumped up and bit them on the nose or some other protuberance. And they say, well, the illegals do the work Americans won't do. We need to legalize these people. And that was what Obama was saying. The solution to illegal immigration is to legalize the illegals.
Yeah.
And
I think
so
the solution
enraged
to bank robberies is we legalize bank robberies.
Well, you know, I testified before the New York State Senate that I'm not without a sense of humor, and I find that humor gets people to listen a little bit. You got to get their attention. I tell people, if you get in front of an audience, never be accused of being an unlicensed anesthesiologist. So I was on a radio show talking about Greenspan, and I was railing about it, and the host said to me, well, Mr. Cullors, I don't think you like Greenspan. What do you really think of the man? I said, well, you know, as I watched him do that hearing, and I saw the testimony live, and you can still see a video, and you're welcome to look at it and see if I'm not getting this right. I said that I was struck by a thought. Watching Greenspan in action, I said, you know, this is the first time someone's testified before the U.S. Senate while suffering from rigor mortis. I can't stand the guy, and I make no bones about it. You know, we are undermining America and Americans, and we're doing it daily. And when I testified before the New York State Senate about giving driver's licenses to illegal aliens, we heard the same lies that we're hearing from this administration. The illegals are going to drive anyway, so if we give them licenses, they will drive more safely and they'll be able to get insurance. And the other lie, well, this is a federal responsibility, so we have nothing to do with it. So when I got up to speak at this hearing before the New York State Senate in Albany, I said, you know, I hate the word anyway. Criminals are going to violate every law under the sun anyway, and if you don't believe it, go to the jail and you'll see them. And if you're bored one rainy afternoon, pull up the arrest report and see exactly how creative some of them actually had to get in order to violate those laws. So by the same reasoning that they're going to drive anyway, I guess you could say convicted felons are going to carry firearms anyway. So maybe the solution to guns and felons is to give them carry permits, since they're going to carry anyway, give them firearm instructions, so if they could shoot more accurately, they'd be less likely to innocent bystanders if they're involved in a shootout. And on top of that, maybe you can convince them to use trigger locks between drive-bys and bank robberies. You could have made enormous strides in public safety under this reasoning. Now, I said the idea that this is a federal responsibility, I agree. But you know what? The drugs that are peddled on street corners throughout America, most of that poison comes across the same border that provides the illegals with access to our country. So if you believe that if something or someone comes across the border because the federal government failed, that the cities and the states have no job to do here, then I want to know how many members of the New York State Senate are willing to vote right here and right now to end all narcotics investigations on the state or city level.
Right.
And it was a very funny sight, Tom, because all the Democrats who were still in the chamber at that point got up and left. It looked like a fire drill.
Yeah. Well,
It must have been something I said.
Yeah. Well, when Dick has been on the show before, and he was a law enforcement officer for his whole life, I said, Dick, can you think of any federal law? And I went and looked up I can't remember what the number was, but anyways, a federal law on enforcing federal law and prosecuting crimes. The federal government has jurisdiction on investigations and the prosecution. So in other words, if somebody was caught kidnapping someone else, and
right,
that's a federal crime, then the federal government gets to do the prosecution, not the local, even though the local law enforcement may have caught them. But as far as enforcing federal law, especially when there's a crime being committed, all law enforcement officers in the country, state, local, have the authority to enforce federal law. So the example I use with Dick is, let's say you are sitting near the border of your state looking for speeders, and all of a sudden a car comes zipping across the border and matches the description of a car that was involved in a bank robbery. It's now a federal offense. It's crossed state lines.
Right.
Do you say, oh, it's the Fed's job now, and you just sit there and let it go by? Of course not. But the federal government is trying to tell us that not only will they handle the investigations and prosecution of the illegal immigrants, they will handle all the enforcement, so no local and state law enforcement officers can even stop a criminal who happens to be from another country because – and then get involved in the immigration process. Hey, we caught this guy. He was trying to rob a 7-Eleven. We've asked him his immigration status because he can't speak English and appears to have all kinds of documents on him that are from Mexico. But no, we can't ask him that so we can get him out of our country. We want criminals out of our country. And my friends that are law enforcement officers in Tucson, Arizona, say that's one of the biggest problems they have. They need to get these criminals out of our country permanently. And their hands are now tied by our federal government, not allowing them to do their jobs, trying to say that, well, it's their job. Well, they've failed at their job, and you've made that case and clearly pointed out how they've failed at doing their job. So what happens when the federal government fails to do its job? We just sit on our thumbs and go, sorry, we can't do anything. Baloney. We're going to do something, and we're not going to take this. And that's one of the reasons we've got to get rid of this president. He is just economically hurting our country and security-wise, severely harming our country. Now, we've talked a lot about the security aspects here, but tell us the economic damage that's going on to our country right now because of all of the illegal immigration coming across from
Mexico.
Absolutely.
And by the way, I helped Arizona with that insane lawsuit. And by the way, this isn't about profiling. You know, look, when people are hurt, by the way, the immigrant community is the most likely to be the ones attacked by transnational criminals, and not just from Latin America, whether it's the Russian community, the Asian community, the Jamaican community. As an agent, I saw this daily.
Right.
Latinos are losing jobs. Black Americans, white Americans, Asian Americans. America is a rainbow. We are the most diverse country on the planet. So when people are losing jobs or losing their lives or getting hurt, it's people of all flavors. This nonsense that it's about racism is bunk. It's a false argument, and enough people are dumb enough to fall for it. But the way that we're getting hammered economically, the goal of foreign workers is to send as much money as possible out of the country. Every year, between $100 billion, with a B, and $200 billion get sent out of the country. Economists talk about something known as the multiplier factor. The idea is that if I earn a paycheck, part of that money goes to pay for stuff that I buy. Maybe I'll buy a new refrigerator or a pair of shoes or a pair of blue jeans. Maybe I'll hire somebody to put a new roof up on my house or pave my front walk. He makes that money. Now he goes out and he buys a suitcase and gets on an American Airlines flight to Brazil, and if he's fortunate, Tom is the captain of the flight. So this is known as the multiplier effect. You circulate money through the economy by earning money, spending it, investing it, and so forth, which is supposedly the idea behind the economic stimulus package. But the problem is that when foreign workers are paid, their goal, whether they're here legally or on a so-called temporary work visa, and the only reason those visas are temporary is because no one lives forever, because no one enforces their departure, their goal is to send money to their home country. That money is permanently lost to our economy. It would make no difference to the American economy if the money these people earned was used as kindling for a campfire or is sent out of the country as it is every single day. So we're being bled that way. Because foreign workers are taking those jobs, American workers are not. So we have Americans who are either unemployed or underemployed. Their mortgages are getting foreclosed on, which means that they are losing their houses, which means that more houses get dumped onto an already overloaded market, a saturated market. Supply and demand kicks in. It drives everybody's house value down. And then something else happens. In many communities, so many houses have been foreclosed and the people have been forced out by the banks that took control of the houses, but they can't sell them. So you now have abandoned homes that prostitutes and drug dealers move into. This affects community safety. And then if you're maintaining your mortgage and you're mowing your lawn and doing what you're supposed to, this little community that you were so happy to move into 10 years ago is starting to look like Dodge City because you have all these abandoned houses. So it affects your safety. And if you decide, gee whiz, I think I'm going to get out of this neighborhood, there's too many abandoned houses, who's going to buy your house?
Right.
So this problem is happening throughout America. Now, I'll add a couple of more costs in. The Congressional Budget Office, which estimates what things cost, say that it costs 20 to 40% more to educate a child who has come to our country, let's say in high school, and doesn't speak any English. So the schools now are laying off teachers because the municipalities don't have money. Meanwhile, foreign national students who can't speak the language and enter the school system without the barest of fundamental educational skills is a drag on that whole school's population. So that weighs things down. The criminal element is another problem. Now, a lot of the legal aliens are just looking for jobs, but you also have lots of fugitives, people who are wanted for crimes in their home countries, people who come to America commit identity theft, which creates a nightmare for the people whose identities are stolen, and so it goes. So when you look at the impact of all of this on America, and we're being told we have a war on drugs, yet I can't remember the last time I saw a serious effort to put commercials on TV or the radio to dissuade people from using drugs. Half the movies that are out there today, everyone winks and blinks and jokes about smoking marijuana, getting high, and so forth. It seems like a third of the commercials on TV are about pharmaceuticals, and I always love the look out kind of statements at the end, what it may cause you. So if we have a war on drugs, but nothing being done to educate children and young people about the dangers, we have all these programs going on. And by the way, 70% of crime, 75% of crime, directly or indirectly, is drug-related. Explain to me, Tom, how any of this is consistent with what's best for America or Americans. We are being bled every which way, healthcare, the educational system, the remittances that are being wired out of the country, the crime and the damage that causes and the mayhem it causes to families. And meanwhile, the politicians sit there saying, well, everything is fine. The borders is never more secure. And do you remember when Janet Napolitano said the system worked the morning after Captain Underpants almost blew himself up on that airplane?
Right, yeah.
And I wrote a commentary where I said, if hope is not a strategy, then dumb luck is not a success. When I told that to Mike Chertoff, I thought he was going to have a cow.
Yeah. Yeah, this administration will just say anything and everything. I mean, look,
but
we've got a big flip-flop on the drilling for oil.
Fair.
I mean, there's the perfect example. Just a month and a half ago, this president was mocking people that were saying drill, baby, drill, or drill now, you know, whatever people were saying it was all, just all for show, et cetera, and now he makes this announcement that they're going to start issuing more leases and releasing other lands at, you know, in order to drill more. So a month and a half ago, he's mocking people for saying we need to drill more and that it won't work, and then now he's doing it. Well, he's done the polling on this and figured out most people want us to drill for our own oil and start refining more of our own oil. And so he cares about winning. That's really all he cares about, is winning this next race. And we need to get rid of him, because his interests are not in our best interest. He doesn't care about us. He doesn't care about this country. And therefore, we need to get rid of him so we can solve a whole host of problems. Immigration, though, is a big problem. And I would say it's probably bigger than most people realize. It is a big issue. But now, not from his perspective, what we're talking about, the damage that it does to our own country, but why, when the economy is still in the shape it's in, and I've played the sound bites on previous shows, but briefly, between him and Joe Biden saying, you know, last summer was the summer of recovery, it wasn't anything close to it, they predicted they'd be creating 250 to 500,000 jobs a month, they never came even close to that, and now they're saying, well, you know, you got to give us some more time, it's not our fault, you know, we just walked into this. It's absolutely their fault what's going on right now, but...
Yeah.
They're going to tell us anything they want, they can, to get reelected. But to say that, you know, we're opposed to drilling oil, but oh wait, you know, maybe we are. And it's really a double flip flop, because remember, he made the announcement about a year ago, just before I think the oil rig out there in the Gulf caught on fire and spilled a lot of oil, that he was going to, you know, allow for more. Like, he even has a choice in this. Like, he's in charge of all of this somehow, and he's not. It's because he has these regulatory agencies that he's now using for legislative purposes, which really he can't do. And I've covered this before. I won't cover it today. We'll get into it some other time. But via the Constitution, him giving directives to these different departments, he's not the one that's in charge. Yes, I realize it's the executive branch, but they're funded and appropriated and authorized by Congress. Congress should be giving the direction to them, and they typically do give direction to these agencies. The president has no authority to write the words are escaping me right now, executive orders. He has no authority. If you look at the Constitution, it says he can ask for an opinion in writing from the different departments in the executive branch. Now, if the president of the United States, Michael, has an especially enumerated power that says he can ask a question, is it intuitive then that he can also issue orders? No. The Constitution is very clear about this in the Tenth Amendment. If it's not in the Constitution, you can't do it. And there's nothing in there about writing executive orders. So that's just a little sidelight there. But the bottom line is they're going to do whatever they can to get reelected. And so here they're looking at the polling. Well, we were for drilling, then, oh, no, ban on it. And then, oh, we're for drilling again. The reality is this. The EPA and Department of Interior can hold up any of these leases and any of these drilling projects starting, and can even hold up the research involved in going into a new area by, you know, dragging their feet on permits. And that's what they'll do. So he can say one thing, but what's going to happen in reality, and he lied before about how much increase there has been in drilling. The drilling in the Gulf has gone significantly down. Platforms have left. That was not true, that it's increased in any way. It's significantly down from before that one oil rig had the fire. And that's because his administration has been blocking new permits, old permits being reissued or reinstated,
etc. But the other thing that he did with Brazil, he goes to Brazil to lend them money so that they can drill in Brazil?
Yep, that's precisely what he did. And, I mean, it makes no sense. The guy is either – he just thinks we're all stupid, I guess. And he can go down there and say, we love you, Brazil, and we want to partner with you in drilling for oil off of your coast,
and we want to buy it for you. But, all right, let's be honest, though. The average American is stupid, and it's not just Obama. And believe me – you know, I used to have arguments with my friends all the time over who was the worst president, Jimmy Carter, George W. Jimmy Carter, George W. And then along came Mr. Obama, and he settled the arguments for everybody. But here's the issue. Both sides of the aisle bear responsibility. And I know everyone sees the Tea Party as being very conservative, but I've spoken at Tea Party events where there have been thousands of people in attendance. And you know what? There's lots of disenfranchised Democrats who are now part of the Tea Party, because a lot of people want to vote for none of the above.
Right.
You know, if
yeah.
you look at campaign finance, as a federal agent, I couldn't take a cup of coffee. These people are taking with both hands. They brag
right.
about it being the best fundraisers. Don't
right.
you think when someone writes a check for $50,000 that they're expecting something in return for that check? We're not talking
yeah.
about a $50 contribution because you like Charlie down the block. Now he's going to run for Congress. Eh, he's a good guy. Here's $50, Charlie. I hope you win. You're not expecting anything. But if you start to really write serious money to the parties, to the candidates, and so forth, isn't there an expectation?
Well, there is an expectation, and the expectation should be that I've got an open door now. I can go and at least make my case to my candidate
right.
or the party, but you're right. It doesn't work out that way. It turns into political and or corporate cronyism, depending on
yes.
which direction you're looking at it. But
and that's why, as I said when I had lunch with Lou one time, I said, you know, Lou, every time we have a new election, we get the best government money combined. That became like a 7-part series on his program. But it's true, and the average American does not get involved. I bet you there are people listening to us right now saying, boy, these guys are right. Well, if you think we're right, my question to you folks, because only you know the answer, have you written your congressman? Have you called your senator? Have you arranged for a meeting with your city councilman? Because,
right.
you see, at the end of the day, when people don't complain, people figure that everybody is happy.
Yep.
You have got to be heard. We go into restaurants, we're very specific about the food that we want to eat, the way we want it prepared. You don't go into a restaurant and say to the waiter, throw some crap on the plate, whatever it is, I'll eat it. I have
yeah.
never seen that happen in a restaurant. Well, you know what? We need to be no less specific when we approach our elected representatives. And we've got to learn to see beyond the lies and the nonsense. They put up these programs, Secure Border Initiative. Wow, does that sound tough? It sounds like they dug up General George Patton himself to lead the charge. That was the so-called virtual fence. We squandered years on this program, over $1 billion, and then they had to turn around and say, you know, this thing doesn't work. So
yeah.
what is it that they're doing? They're creating illusions, and it's time for we the people to make it clear to the elected folks out there that we're not as dumb as they hoped we were.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, well, I agree with everything, and we love having you on the show, Michael. I want to let people know that in upcoming weeks, you're going to be doing a little filling in for me. We've talked about getting you on the air on a full-time basis. When I
yep.
say full-time, you're looking at Friday at 7 p.m. We're not
right.
quite ready to do that. You're not quite ready to do that. But what we're going to do then is have you fill in as a special guest host
sure.
On the show occasionally. There are going to be some times where I'm not going to be able to broadcast because of flying or some other commitment. That
you're
happens every now and then,
you're
of course.
You're just a flighty character, Tom.
I'm a flighty character. You know, I was saying to my wife last night, this aviation business, it's an up-and-down business.
Oh.
I know, that's really bad. I actually said that once without thinking about it, because it is a cyclical business in terms of, you know, we're doing good as an airline, we're not doing good, and that kind of thing. So it's kind of ironic that that's the kind of words we use when we describe something that's cyclical economically. But
the ups and downs of it all.
Yeah. But I want to throw out a couple announcements here. And
sure.
You, please stay with us, Michael, right up to
sure.
the end. We'll finish up here in a few minutes. It's great having you on, and this always gives
it's
us more food for thought.
Wonderful joining you. It's a privilege.
But at the end of this month, for Memorial Day weekend, we're having an open house at the Valiant Air Command Warbird Museum. That's in Titusville, Florida. It's at the Tyco
oh, wow.
Field. And I will be there in my Navy flight suit, standing in front of one of the many jets that I've flown in my career. There's an F-14 there. There's an F-18 there. There's an A-4. Both the A-4 and F-18 are painted up as Blue Angel jets because the Blue Angels flew both of those at various times. And we've got a F-5 there, and I can't remember now off the top of my head if there's an F-16 or not. But so I'll be floating around like a butterfly talking to people about the different shows. It's the 28th, 29th, and 30th. I will absolutely be there on the 20th, which is a Sunday. I don't know if I'm going to be able to make the Saturday. And then again, for Memorial Day, Monday, the 30th, it will be open. I won't be there because I've got to go fly on that day. But 28th and 29th, absolutely the 29th. So if you live anywhere in Central Florida and you're interested in coming on over and enjoying the Air Museum and the history, we'll have lots of other old-timers like me there talking about the planes that are in there. We've got some folks going back to World War II aviators, both in the, well, that would be the Army, who come in and stand there and tell you about the history of some of the different planes. They do, is going to be a flyby, and it seems to me they do give rides on their, let me see, I'm reading the press release. They've got a C-47, I think, I don't remember if they give rides or not. You'd have to, oh yeah, here we go. The Tycho Bell, our famous World War II Normandy invasion veteran C-47 will be available for rides. Sign up now, and I'll throw the phone number out there too. Call 321-268-1941. And it's a great weekend. It's not the air show. They've already done the air show. That was in March, and I wasn't able to make that. But if you want to come on out and chat about anything, especially flying, please do. So there's that plug. Now, I should have done this at the beginning of the show, but we've got something that's kind of important going on right now with the Keystone Pipeline. Go to USATalkRadioNetwork.com, go to my page, and in the middle, near the top, you're going to see a link and a brief description of the Keystone Pipeline. This is a pipeline that will connect vast amounts of Canadian crude oil to America. We already get 20% of our crude from them, but it'll make it a lot easier to get to us. The transportation will be very inexpensive and probably will cut the price of oil once that thing starts flowing. It's going to take years to build that, but it's a very good pipeline. It's come right down through the center of the U.S. all the way down to Texas. But there'll be a few stops along the way, and I guess they're going to be building some refineries, some new refineries in connection with that pipeline. But right now, it's taking the State Department is taking public comment. Take a listen to the webinars that are going on. There's one tomorrow, Wednesday, and then Thursday. And June 6th is the deadline. The webinars are 30 minutes long. They start at 2 p.m. in the afternoon, 2 p.m. Eastern, and go to 2:30. And you can find out more about the pipeline and how you can help us tell our government, yes, you better build this. So here's one of the things that I think you'll like, Michael, is the fact that by putting this pipeline in place, we could reduce our reliance on oil from Venezuela and the Middle East by 40%.
Wow.
Almost anything to give old Hugo Chavez a kick in the pants, you know, and that would definitely give him a kick in the pants.
Canadians are our friends. I had the privilege of working with members of the RCMP, and they're just as good and just as dedicated and trustworthy as the best that we have here in America.
Absolutely. Well, my wife is Canadian, so I'm partial to Canada, but I'd much rather see them get our money. So, again, go to USATalkRadioNetwork.com to go to my page, and you'll find out the information and a link to another page. I couldn't fit it all onto my radio page, but it'll take you to another page. It gives you all the information. Click on the webinar dates, and it will take you to where you can sign up and give you some instructions on how to do that. So that's an important thing. And then remember, this Wednesday, the CFO of Florida is going to be on the Steve Rosenblum and Daria DiGiovanni show Wednesday at 2 p.m. Eastern, so don't miss that. You'll like the show. If you haven't listened to Steve before, you know Steve, Michael, and great guy. Very thoughtful.
I'm going to be on with him on Friday, by the way.
Oh, good. Okay. On his show on Friday.
Yeah.
Well, there we go. Okay, yeah. Let's talk about that. Again, you know, Steve gets great guests on his show, and you don't want to miss his show. He's broadcasting now Monday through Friday, and then he's got his weekend show also on Saturday, and I can't remember if it's 6 p.m. or 7 p.m., but just go to his page. You can go to USATalkRadioNetwork.com and then go to the Steve and Daria page. And then there's links there that will take you to their website and their blog talk page where you can see all the archived radio stuff. But so there we go. He clearly has great guests if he's got you coming on Friday, Michael. But
okay.
Now tell everybody one more time how they can connect with you and find out more about you, whether it's anything from Facebook, Twitter. I don't think you're on those yet.
I'm not doing that yet. I have to do that. Shame on me that I haven't yet.
Yeah.
But please go to my website, Michael Cutler, MichaelCutler, michaelcutler.net or capsweb.org. There's other websites that carry my articles, News with Views, NewsBlaze, there's a few others. Well, you can just put my name, Michael Cutler, into Google with the word immigration, and a whole bunch of stuff will pop up. But the trick is what I'm doing and what Tom is doing, we want to engage you in interesting conversation, but this is about becoming educated. You know, the First Amendment, very interestingly, everyone says, oh, freedom of speech, freedom of the press. It's also the right to assemble peaceably. During the founding of this country, the only way to assemble peaceably was live in person, face-to-face, toe-to-toe, whether it was under a shade tree or in someone's house or in a church or a synagogue or a school. Today we assemble peaceably on the Internet and on talk radio. And it is so important to have a free exchange of ideas, to be mythbusters, to get beyond the hype and the nonsense and the propaganda, frankly, that's being spewed by far too many people. So this is a wonderful opportunity for Americans to get together. We may disagree on certain issues. We're supposed to. That's the democratic process. But it's important that when we approach politicians, we do so with an understanding of the issue so that we can speak intelligently and know when we're being given a snow job and when they're on the level. And that's really what this is all about, folks. So,
absolutely.
By the way, I'm also going to be on Mike Savage's show. I did a 10-minute interview earlier today. They told me it'll be running tomorrow on Michael Savage. And tomorrow morning, I'm on with Helen Glover, WHJJ. I'm on her program every Tuesday from 8 until 8:30. So, you know, I'm doing my best to get as many people to listen to the perspectives that they need to know in order to make reasonable choices and reasonable decisions. As I say, when you approach a politician or their staffers, you need to be concise and focused, but you also need to have a clear idea about what the issues are, and whether it's petroleum, whether it's about national security, whether it's about the economy. We really need to educate ourselves. This is far more important than worrying about who's winning Dancing with the Stars or which baseball team is going to come in first this year.
Right, absolutely. Well, you're welcome to stick around with us. We're going to do a few lighter side type things here. We're going to tell
sure.
a few of the jokes that were on late night television. But again, Michael, great having you on the show. We'll have you back, and we will have you back to fill in for me and get you back up and running so that we can get you back on a weekly basis with your own show. And we'll make sure that we post all that information on the website so that people know when that's going to happen. Because we had some people in the chat room ask, when's Michael going to be starting his broadcast? So people are waiting, Michael, to get back on
the
air.
Not soon enough, but the day is coming quickly.
Yeah, good. Okay, well, on the Tonight Show with Jay Leno, he said, have you seen these Republican presidential candidates? The only one that hasn't had three wives is Mitt Romney, and he's the Mormon. That was pretty good. Oh, man.
I love that.
Yeah, the Late Show, top 10 surprises in the Osama bin Laden diary. I'm not going to read all of them, but apparently bin Laden always dotted his I's in jihad with a smiley face. And let's see, he was the first one to suggest Hugh Grant as a possible replacement for Charlie Sheen.
Oh, no.
Let's see what else. And he just won't shut up about the Beastie Boys, the new Beastie Boys album.
Oh,
so did you see any in there, Paula, that you caught your eye of those jokes?
Oh, you know what? I don't have my email open, Tom. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I get them every day, and I peruse them, and I just... You know, because you can't watch all the shows at once, but they're really good jokes, and I thought that you would enjoy them and sharing them.
Yeah. Well, here's another Charlie Sheen one. We know that he's been replaced now by Ashton Kutcher on Two and a Half Men. Either that or he's gotten punked. Is that what Kutcher used to do, that punk show? So maybe
yes.
They're going to be on the first show, go, sorry, Charlie, that's a joke. Okay, you're still on here. I doubt that's going to happen, though. He's kind of gone wacky on us. Let's see. I'm not going to read any more of these. But in any case, so, you know, we'll cover more current events and get caught up tomorrow, Paula, on what's been in the news. I was not watching any news or TV over the weekend. We just had a nice weekend in Daytona Beach and stayed in the Hilton right there on the beach and just enjoyed the weekend. It was a nice getaway. So I'm going to have to get caught back up on what's going on, and we'll talk about that stuff tomorrow. How'd that sound to you, Paula?
That sounds great.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us again, Michael. Thanks, Paula, for being here, as always.
My pleasure. I hope you guys have a wonderful evening, a great rest of the week, and look forward to joining you again very soon.
We will. Sounds good. All right. Thanks, Michael. All right, Paula, you take care. We'll see you tomorrow.
Listening to the American Hour with Commander Tom Garcia on the USA Talk Radio Network.